Hello, I'm Nigel Reed, and welcome to Cricket Central. On this edition, India and the Aussies pile on the runs in the one-dayers. Pakistan upset South Africa in the first test, and Canada gets set for the T20 qualifiers. All that and more on today's Cricket Central. With me, as usual, cricket writer and broadcaster Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean, head coach at Toronto Cricket Club. Gentlemen, welcome. Let's launch straight into this India-Australia series, Josh, if we may. And if your interests are entertainment and seeing a lot of runs scored in a short space of time and one or two titanic run chases, this is surely the series to watch, isn't it?
It's been unbelievable. And we recently spoke on Cricket Central, Nigel, about the death of 50-over cricket. Well, it looks as though that's been turned around. This has been a fascinating series between what are regarded at the moment as the two best ODI teams in the world, the 50-over format. Unbelievable runs, incredible run chases, and the first game was a little bit of a non-event compared to the most recent two games. Australia won the first one, but the series came alive after game two. India chasing down 360 for the loss of one wicket. Can you believe that? And if we thought that that was incredible, game three, James Faulkner hit 30 off the 48th over, and Australia chased down 304 in incredible style. So what an unbelievable series it's been so far.
So why are we seeing all these runs? I mean, are they short boundaries? Are the wickets conducive to big hitting? I mean, is there any rhyme or reason to this?
Yeah, it's a combination of pretty short boundaries, extremely fast outfields, and pretty flat batting tracks. And I think India's bowling attack hasn't quite been as strong as we've seen in recent times. And Australia also got a pretty strong bowling attack, but they lack a real attacking spinner, and as a result of that we're seeing big totals.
For us, no surprises, I suppose, as far as India concerned. They bat down, well, whale down the order down to the bottom of your ankles, but as Josh suggests, the bowling department is again found wanting.
Well, that's quite right. The bowling has been found wanting. There's not a lot of quality in the pace bowling. They're pretty average players, and if Ishant Sharma is your main fast bowler, you're always going to have trouble. Absolutely leaks runs. Isn't really the smartest bowler, so if he starts getting hit, he often doesn't know what to do. The one thing that he always does have in his corner is the support of his captain, and that goes a long way for Ishant Sharma, and you can actually see after he's gotten a bit of a pasting that he can often come back for second spells and is a better bowler because the captain has had a word or two. In this case, the last game that they played wasn't enough because he was bowling too late in the innings when he got hit, and there was no recovery after that. But one thing that's kind of interesting to me is that India have never been too fussed about the fact that they don't have strong bowling unit, and the reason for that is the batting. The batting, as you described it, going all the way down to your ankles, is absolutely true, and that's kind of been the way India has played their ODI cricket for, you know, donkey's years, that up till number 6 or 7, the batting is so strong that whatever the bowling leak, the batting will be able to get those runs. And certainly the match that Josh just referenced, where just losing one wicket, they were able to score 300 plus. And similarly, if they bat first, they feel that the batting will put up, you know, such a high score that doesn't matter how poorly they bowl, you know, the opposition won't be able to reach those runs in most cases. So that's basically how they play their cricket. They load it up with the batsmen, and the bowlers are almost cannon fodder.
Well, I suppose loyalty is all well and good in some aspects for us, but if Ishant Sharma isn't producing the goods, then sooner or later the captain has got to make a decision, and perhaps not a comfortable one.
Well, that's right, and that may happen. But I think one of the things that MS Dhoni has as a captain is confidence in the players that he has chosen, and he gives them a bit of a run. He doesn't really get into the knee-jerk, you know, reaction of dropping a player because of a bad game or two. And, you know, certain captains have that. Now, if you look back, I mean, the example that I always think of is Stuart Broad got smashed for six sixes and an over by Yuvraj Singh. Well, that would have been the end of most bowlers' careers, particularly if you're, you know, the frontline bowler and just got smashed for six sixes. He'll likely never play T20 again. And well, George Broad ended up captaining in England in T20s. And really that has to do with the fact that in spite of getting a pasting, the captain, you know, the establishment, the board had faith that this player may have had a couple of bad games, but can ultimately deliver the good. With Ishant Sharma, I think he's on thin ice. Another, you know, bad game may spell the end of him, at least for this series. But, you know, it really does have to do with the fact that, you know, Dhoni usually is proven right in the choices that he makes. And you only have to look at, you know, the titles that he's won with the squad that he's won to, you know, over the years.
Josh, I suppose when we think about one day internationals and T20 cricket, the fans want to come and be entertained. Of course they do. But we're looking at mammoth totals here. I wonder whether this is kind of realistic kind of cricket and whether, you know, a 250 par score, I mean, the runs should be actually harder to come by.
Yeah, it's been an unbelievable series from a run side of things. And one thing that we've noticed with both teams, it hasn't just been the odd performance here and there by people. There's been a number of players stepping up. George Bailey scored runs, Voges has scored runs for Australia. And from India, Dhawan has been brilliant. Kohli has been brilliant. Dhoni just smashed 139. So right across the board, the standard has been unbelievable with the bat. Incredible stuff.
Are you surprised by the sheer number of runs for us that have been scored so far in this series?
Not really. When I look at that Indian side, and, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, these are all players that have done well in the IPL and they're used to scoring runs at good clip, and now instead of 20 overs, they've got 50 overs in which to show their wares. I was always expecting there to be big totals. I mean, flat batting tracks. You know, Josh pointed out no great spinner on the Australian side who could actually take advantage of conditions. So I always expected the runs to be high. The one thing I must admit that I wasn't expecting was when India chased down, you know, a big 300 plus total for the loss of only one wicket. I was expecting more games kind of like the last one that we saw, where it kind of goes down to the wire and there's kind of a rear guard action where somebody just comes and blasts the 50 off, you know, just a few balls. And that's what, you know, Faulkner did. But generally, I mean, India in particular, so top heavy with their batting that you do expect 300 plus.
Can it be said, because most of these players, of course, play T20 cricket either with their countries or in leagues around the world, is the T20 phenomenon and the rate at which scores are acquired in that form of the cricket beginning to leak into and have an effect on ODI cricket?
Yes, very clearly. And this series is a very good example of that. That when you're playing in similar conditions with a similar looking batting lineup, you know, the scores are basically almost reflective of what would happen if a T20 game was stretched to 50 overs. That's kind of what this is looking like a little bit. Of course, fielding restrictions come in, you know, the bowlers have a little bit more opportunity to recover and make some plans. But just the fact that these players are used to just smashing the ball around from word go is reflected in the scores that we're seeing in this series.
Josh, talk a little bit about the bigger picture. India and Australia, of course, experts at the one-day game, but this may have an effect going forward long-term on the ODI rankings. And as you mentioned before we came on air, of course, the next Cricket World Cup, the 50-over World Cup, is in your home country, Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, this series has a big impact, in my opinion, on who will start favourites for that World Cup. In recent times, we've seen Australia drop off slightly in Test cricket, and T20, we're quite lowly ranked now. So it's great to see the Australian squad still maintaining a high standard of 50-over cricket, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. They've been successful for so long, four-time world champions. They've got a fantastic squad now, and it's going to make an incredible World Cup in 2015. This India side, there is a big question mark over them, and there always has been a big question mark over them when they travel to Australia. Their form hasn't been outstanding in Australia, particularly in this format of the game. Can they come to Australia and match it with Australia on Australian conditions? That's the big question. But this series, I think, has a big bearing on who will be the favourites for that World Cup.
And I suppose for us, we shouldn't forget that India will go to Australia and New Zealand as the defending World Cup champions. Do you agree with what Josh says about, you know, iffy form from the Indians when they hit the Australian continent?
Well, I think, I mean, Josh is quite right that, you know, India have generally struggled in Australia. But I think that they're closing the gap quite substantially now. And
have they got time to close it completely before 2015?
I don't know about completely, but certainly now this group of players has, a number of them have toured Australia a couple of times now. You know, the conditions will not be as alien as they've been in the past. And I think this group of young players, the Virat Kohlis of the world, they have a lot of confidence. They don't really get bowed down and cowed down the way, you know, previous generations of Indian teams did. So I think India will still go into the tournament fancying their chances, even though it's a year and plus away.
For us, fascinating insight. We'll talk more about the Pakistan and South Africa Africa series in just a moment. Before we leave Australia, Josh, a word about David Warner, who hasn't been in favour for a little while. Everybody knows his quality, and it seems to be coming to the fore again.
Yeah, he's a much polarised figure in the Australian cricketing world. He's a guy that's had some troubles recently in the media and some behavioural issues, and as a result of that, he's been left out of this current 50-over squad. And it's also relating to his form in 50-over cricket. Good to see him go back to Australia. He's worked hard. He's got his cricket into gear. He went 0-1-17 in the first three games of the Ryobi Cup down there, the 50-over tournament. But he's then gone 139 and 138 in his past two innings. So it looks as though he's rediscovering some of that magic that saw him burst onto the scene in T20 cricket. He's doing it better than a runner ball in 50-over cricket. So I think we can expect to see him back in the green and gold pretty soon with that sort of form.
Is he looking to get back into an Ashes squad? Because that's fast approaching.
Yeah, he's come out and said his number one goal right at this point in time is Test cricket. He wants to be in that Ashes series and he wants to be firmly entrenched in the Test squad come that first Test in Brisbane. And that's the Test the whole cricket world is looking forward to after a pretty entertaining recent Ashes series in England.
Plenty more to come when we continue on Cricket Central.
Watch the Champions League T20 live and in stunning high definition, exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. Cricket Central is presented by CrickHQ, the all-in-one cricket technology platform. One-touch scoring, no mistakes. The CrickHQ app makes scoring fun and easy. Download for free today at crickhq.com on iOS and Android platforms.
Welcome back to Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid, alongside Farah Sarwat and Josh McLean, as we meander around the cricketing world. We've spoken about the Australian-India series, which is certainly capturing the attention in terms of the runs being scored there, but runs as well in the Middle East, where Pakistan are forced to play their home games, shall we say, in inverted commas, and they're playing the South Africans in a two-test series. There are some one-dayers as well. And certainly for us, there were some eyebrows raised, shall we put it that way, that Pakistan beat South Africa in the first test. In some quarters, it was described as a huge upset. I'm pretty sure that's not the way you see it.
Not quite. I mean, I think it's an upset, obviously, because, South Africa is the best team in test cricket, and Pakistan is somewhere in the middle of the pack. And before this series, Pakistan ended up drawing a series against Zimbabwe, winning a test and losing a test. And, you know, that was actually their last game. They lost a test match to Zimbabwe, and then they come in to play South Africa. So if you're a casual observer of the game, you will say, yes, it's a huge upset because of those reasons. But the reality is that, you know, the conditions in the UAE and Abu Dhabi suit Pakistan, suit their bowling attack. And it's been a happy hunting ground. And, you know, if you follow this team for a period of time, you know, you'd remember that Pakistan actually beat England 3-0 in the UAE. And at that time, England were the top-ranked side. To me, it wasn't a surprise. I actually expected, at least in the first game, for Pakistan's spinners to be all over the South African batsmen, even though I have to say that there's a lot of quality in that South African batting lineup, and it's much superior to Pakistan's. But the balance really is addressed by the fact that Pakistan have good spinners and South Africa don't. That really is going to be the key in the next game, is how does this very talented and long batting lineup that South Africa have, what are they able to do against Pakistan's spinners? Now, again, even with the fast bowling, South Africa much better than Pakistan. Although Mohammad Irfan, who is, you know, lead taking the new ball for Pakistan, 7'1", you know, left arm, genuinely quick, bowling really well. And what he's done is he's been able to take a couple of wickets up front and kind of opening up the batting lineup for the spinners. And that's been a real plus for Pakistan, because they would have ordinarily expected the fast bowlers to just kind of bowl a bit, take the shine off the ball, let the spinners come on. But if the fast bowlers can actually get them a breakthrough and more than one wicket, then that gives the spinners a lot of confidence that they have the middle order opened up to bowl to.
But going back to your original point, I mean, you can understand how the media has portrayed this as a huge upset. How on earth, Faraz, do you lose a test to Zimbabwe and then beat South Africa? It makes no sense.
That's Pakistan cricket for you, you know, from the sublime to the ridiculous and then back again. That's how they play their cricket. I mean, for them, they've always been a very talented side, and not the most disciplined, prone to mood swings. If they're not getting on with each other, it reflects in their cricket. If they're having a good time, they can beat anybody. So it's kind of always been the 4-1-1 on Pakistan. But I just think that going back to the UAE, going into conditions that I hesitate to say, you know, similar to home conditions, because they're not really. But the only thing is that the wickets kind of take some spin. You know, the ball doesn't bounce as much, which, you know, is helpful to their batsmen. And that certainly gives them confidence. And a confident Pakistan side is a difficult side to beat.
Well, senior players always have to take responsibility. The nature of the business, Josh, is that young players are always coming through for any international team and pushing the older players. But somebody like Jack Kallis, you would expect with his experience to be a real leader on the South African team, certainly not so in the first test.
Well, it's been interesting to see. He's a guy that is so often one of the world's most consistent all-rounders. We've seen him fail with scores of 5 and 0 in the first test of that series. So is this the beginning of the end for the great man? I hope not. He's been a great champion and he can't be far away from retirement. And he's one of those players that's always going to be up there with the great all-rounders of the game, the Garfield Sobers of the game. So, I mean, his record is second to none with ball and bat. Let's hope he can find that form in the second test.
How much longer does he go on? Because, like anybody else, he doesn't get any younger. Time waits for no man. And I think perhaps the great sportsman, doesn't really matter what the sport is, they know when the clock has ticked past midnight and it's time to say your farewells.
So often the mind and the heart are still there and the body just starts to let you down. And that's what's been so incredible about Kallis. He's put his body through so much with such a long international career as a bowler as well as a batsman. And even right up until recent times, he's still been performing. So he can't be far away. But I tell you one thing, Nigel, when he does retire, he will go down as one of the all-time greats.
Is South Africa a team, and I'm not sure, I'm kind of going out on a limb here, but from time to time, is South Africa a team that either loses focus or when it's on the road doesn't perform to the sum of its parts?
Yeah, well, they've been so impressive in the last couple of years, and they've been the number one test team in the world in recent times. But you're right, they're a team, like Faraz mentioned about Pakistan, South Africa is also a team that's prone to an incredible loss out of nowhere. We see them troubled in big, big events, particularly 50-over cricket and World Cup cricket. And it'll be interesting to see how they go in the World Cup, the next World Cup. But Test cricket, they've been fantastic in recent times. Will they lose this series? That would be an upset.
For us, of course, the next question is, how do they respond? The mark of a good team, again, in any sport, is how it responds to defeat. What do you expect of the South Africans in the second Test?
I expect them to come out extremely hard. And that was actually evidenced by the second innings. I mean, Pakistan only had to chase 40 runs to win the test. And South Africa prized out 3 wickets up front. And at one point, Pakistan was 7 for 3, chasing 40. And South Africa are a team that have dismissed teams for under 100 on many occasions. And I would hazard to say that if, you know, Pakistan were chasing, you know, 80 or 90 runs, they may have been in trouble. So I think that, you know, South Africa's bowling attack would have taken some heart out of that. And the fact that they were able to take, you know, 3 wickets up front when a team was only chasing 40 runs. And I think they'll aim to continue their form from that point on, not really look at the test itself, but look at the things that they did right to take those early wickets. And, you know, I have to say, Nigel, that just on paper, I mean, the South African side, as I've just said, is really superior. I mean, the top 7 is much stronger than Pakistan. The fast bowling is much stronger. But it's really going to come down to, you know, somebody like a Syed Ajmal taking on, you know, South Africa's batsman. And we'll see how it goes. The danger for Pakistan is that they may try to actually go into this game wanting to draw it rather than win it. And once you have one team wanting to win and another team wanting to draw, that's a bad recipe. And South Africa will come out on top if that's the mindset.
The mental approach is key. If Pakistan looks for a draw, chances are they'll lose it. Having got the encouragement and the fillip of that first test victory, I mean, if you were captain of Pakistan, Josh, what message would you be to your boys in the dressing room before you get out there?
Well, I'm a little biased. Being Australian, we have the attacking mindset. There's no such thing as the word draw in Australian cricket unless you are absolute backs to the wall. So if it was up to me, I'd be saying win, win, win. If we win this series 2-0 against what most people regard as the top test team in the world, all of a sudden we're going to be considered right up there with the good teams currently. So it's got to be all about winning. As soon as you have that mentality of we only want to draw this test match, you're on the back foot before you even start.
So the UAE is the home for the moment and perhaps for the foreseeable future. On the subject of the Emirates, for us, that's where Canada is heading pretty soon for the T20 World qualifiers. They're off for some training in Sri Lanka. You've had a look at the squad. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think if I had to pick 11 players to play for Canada, those 11 players are in that 15. So from that respect, I'm satisfied as somebody who follows this team. What the interesting thing really with Canada is that when it's really crunch time and there's a qualifying tournament, somehow, you know, we managed to put in the right team to go to the qualifier, you know, and get Canada over the hump. And then when it's time for the tournament proper, that's when, you know, things fall apart and the favors come in and players who shouldn't be there are there and other players are dropped and all of that kind of stuff happens. But at least getting into the tournament, we're focused and we put the right team in there. So that's heartening to see.
Well, it's about playing tournament cricket. You can do all the preparation in the world. You can have the right team on paper, but if it doesn't perform on the field, and we've seen that from Canada as recently this summer against the United Arab Emirates, where they frankly weren't close games. The UAE were very comfortable winners, despite the fact that there were some talented young Canadians coming through and Ashish Pagai was back in the team.
Yeah, what was fascinating about when the United Arab Emirates came to Canada was that Canada won the four-day match pretty comfortably. And Canada has a pretty good list of players that are explosive batsmen. Then they weren't able to do that in the 50 overs and indeed the 2020s. They got very badly outclassed by the UAE. Their spinners just completely took over and Canada's batsmen really had no answers. So they need to find a way to play spin bowling. And I'll tell you what, there's going to be spinners where they're going and they're going to be spinning wickets. So they got to figure that out pretty quickly.
Faraz, does it help that there are, shall we say, more opportunities for associates to get into the next T20 World Cup? Presumably, that makes the hill a little less steep for Canada in terms of qualification.
Oh, this tournament, Nigel, is as soft a tournament as you could hope for a team like Canada. There are so many opportunities to qualify. You know, there are 16 teams here. I would say 8 of them are competitive. And if, you know, if Canada can't be, you know, one of those 8 teams, you know, there's trouble. So, you know, 6 teams going through, Canada should be one of them. It shouldn't be too hard to qualify. I agree with Josh that there are a number of players here that are explosive and can, you know, hit the big 4s and 6s. But I'm just kind of curious to see if the playing 11 is right and if the batting order is right. I mean, Canada has a number of all-rounders, and that's a good thing. But marshalling the resources, knowing, you know, when to bring certain bowlers into the attack, kind of knowing your opposition, setting the batting order, you know, correctly, those are going to be really important for Canada going through.
One other point on this before we leave it and we leave the programme for this edition. The relationship between the captain, Ashish Pagai, now back leading the team, and his coach. He tells me that they're on the same page, Josh, but then you'd expect him to tell me that. The relationship between captain and coach has got to be critical, hasn't it?
Absolutely, and not just captain and coach, but captain and players as well. Cricket is one of those sports where the captain is very much in charge. As soon as the team goes on the field, it really doesn't matter what the coach has to say. The captain's out in the middle. He makes the decisions and he needs to speak to his other experienced players for guidance. So Ashish Pagai, he's been there before. He's done it. I think he's a great selection as captain. He's got the experience and he's, most of all, he's got the respect of his teammates and the cricketing world. So I think he's a good selection.
Jens, thanks very much. Great to talk to you as usual for our Sarwat and Josh McLean. Cricket Central is a Titan GSG production. The executive producer is Rathan Morthy. The editor is Jeff Eden. And I'm Nigel Reed. Until next time, thanks for listening.